Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our annual analyst presentation. I don't need this glass. I'm going to start off by just reminding people of what we are and what we do as a firm. And I think this has been a very tough period, and it's important for us to go back to our roots and say what we are. And I think since our inception as an organization, we built our business through organic growth and strategic acquisitions. We started internationalizing our business in 1992, and our primary strategy in terms of internationalizing our business was to follow our customer base, gain domestic competence in a particular environment, and then build scale in those geographies. At the same time, facilitating cross-border flow. We believe as an organization, for the type of organization we are and the type of clientele that we deal with, who have become very, very international as South Africa opened up to the rest of the world, we would lose our franchise and lose our client base if we did not follow that path. So we have tried to build a diversified portfolio of businesses and geographies to support our clients, both institutional, corporate, and private individuals, through varying markets and economic cycles. And at the end of the day, what we try to create is a meaningful, balanced portfolio with proper foundations in place so that which gain traction over time. I think if you look at our core geographies at this point in time, if we start off with the UK, it is a very tough and competitive place with many, many banks around the world and asset managers around the world opening up offices and building businesses in that part of the world. I think we have, over the 20 years that we've been there, established a brand and have gained traction in most of the business that we operate within. I can still recall about 8 years ago when we went on roadshows where people were telling us to sell our asset management business in the UK because it had not yet gained traction. These things take time, and it takes time to build up a shop. I think Australia, we originally struggled to gain a foothold. We've had to spend a lot of time reshaping our business model and making sure that we get the right people in the right place so that we can build that business going forward, and we do see strong links between that part of the world and what we do in South Africa and Africa. And then to remind people about what we are in South Africa, we're not a high street bank, we don't have branches, we operate in a carefully niched environment, we target specific client communities, and we've got scale in all three of our businesses, in our banking businesses, our wealth and investment business, and in our asset management business. And I think the industry that we've operated in over the last while, notwithstanding the fact that it has not been so bad in South Africa, has been very tough. And that there was a recent article in The Economist which articulated, for those of you who haven't read it, I will send it to you if you want, if any of the analysts here have not read it, that the banking industry at the moment is the not-for-profit sector. It's a social responsibility industry at the moment. And it has been a very, very tough industry to operate. And obviously that has an impact on us because we have businesses in that part of the world. And for those of you, and I'll get to return on equity just now, to think that return on equity is in this environment and in this world with this kind of regulation that we face, again, read the article, are going to be 20% plus are actually living in a delusional state, particularly when interest rates around the world, long-term bonds in most main countries that are stable, are below 2%. So I think one has to factor that into account, and you will accuse me of being defensive, some of you, and I will try not to be defensive today. So I will carry on and just tell you what we're doing and what we stand for as a firm, and I'll deal a lot more about strategy than about numbers, because numbers you can find Ursula, or you can look in the book, or you can go onto the website, and the information is all out there. So if we look at the year in review, it has been, as I said, a very difficult operating environment. As we stood here last year this time, the world looked like it was in a much better place. It looked like it was recovering, and it looked like it was getting onto some kind of sustainable growth path. I think that turned upside down when Europe started running into trouble again. And that was round about June last year. And I think all hell broke loose during the period, and we've had ups and downs in this last year that it's been like a roller coaster ride. And what happens in our industry when you have a roller coaster ride is certain activity levels stop. You can be in the middle of transactions for clients and you can't get them away because shareholders have all gone into hibernation and they say they're not in this game. So it does affect levels of activity. I think you've seen interest rates at very low levels for all the geographies that we operate within. That also has an impact on earnings, because if you earn naught on your surplus cash or on your capital, you know, it has a big difference to earning 5. And I think we've had quite volatile exchange rates, and obviously in this particular period, the rand weakened quite substantially, on average, about 6% or 7% against sterling, which we report in. The other two were more or less flat in the year. And on the, at the balance sheet date, obviously, it was, I think it was about 13%. So I think the world we're in actually masks the significant realignment that has taken place in our business over many years. As we said, you know, banking is a different game. Regulators want you to be a utility. Politicians want you to give your money away to small business individuals. And they're not in sync with what they want you to do. And the one wants you to have a lot more capital. The other one wants you to lend a lot more. But as a consequence of that, we've had to rethink, and we have been doing this over the last number of years, how we reshape our business model. And that has been something that we have been doing. And we think that that does really mask, the environment does really mask the success that we perhaps have had. So we have realigned our business model quite substantially. I think we've held our revenues. They were down marginally this year. And if you stripped out the debt buyback of last year, they were flat. Despite the difficult markets, and our quality of earnings have increased substantially, which I will deal with in a moment. And I think many of our businesses have continued to deliver. And we do have some underperforming businesses, as you're very well aware of, that we believe are turning the corner, with gross levels of defaults down quite substantially, notwithstanding the fact that impairments overall are flat and down in our core businesses. Integration also has been a focus of what we've been doing across the group. And I think if we look at our core businesses, again, wealth and investments, we integrated Rensburg, which had to integrate our private banking operations into its activity. We have made substantial progress in the integration of Williams de Broe. That will only be complete towards the middle of this year, this financial year for us. So these things take time. They involve integration of systems and processes and people. It's not something that is easy to do, and it does take time, as I pointed out. We have already integrated Evolution Securities both into our investment banking activities and into our what we used to call capital markets, and we've rationalized them into one entity. And then we have been on a medium-term path of putting all our banking businesses onto single platforms with clearly defined target markets. And we believe that over time that strategy will improve our offering to our clients, as well as we will get significant cost and revenue synergies, not short term, but over the long term. And then we've also increased our cross-border activity to service our local client base, and are creating what we would call global communities across our various geographies to ensure that our clients get access to those communities. And then we have also significantly restructured our Australian business and realigned our credit portfolio in that market to so that it looks a lot more like the rest of our organisation, and we'll deal with that in a moment. So looking at our business model, I think 49% of our revenue in this particular season came from what we would call capital light activities, the bulk of that from fees and commissions, and 51% of our revenue came from capital, what we call capital intensive activities, which is lending and some of our investment activities, and to a lesser extent our trading activities. And we are not a big trading bank. As you will notice, we generated £109 million from trading revenue, which is not massive. It's 5% of our total revenue. So our model is quite different and a lot more defensive as a consequence to a US investment bank or a major global investment bank. I think we have created these three distinct businesses, and we now, as we said to you last year, we're going to report in this format going forward. And asset management and wealth and investments made 48% of our operating profit, specialist banking 52% of our operating profit. Obviously, that number is a lowish number from specialist banking because of we still had elevated impairments in this particular particular year. And that should realign itself back to probably 60-40 is with the target that we would probably set ourselves over time. I think impairments were down in two key geographies. Our credit loss ratio in South Africa now is down to 0.61 from 0.71 last year. And it's not, we would say a normal number for that business is about 0.4. So it's not quite normalized yet, but it is normalizing. In the UK, it was down to 1.2 or 1.3 from 2.something%. And that's also not quite normal yet. It still should normalize in time at a lower sort of level. And in Australia, we had a big clean out, and we had the impairment charge of 3%. That will normalize again down at 0.4, 0.5%. And hopefully that we'll see that in the not too distant future, because we can't have that kind of write off again. We just don't have that kind of book left. So we are seeing that, you know, unless the world blows up and there's some big drama out there, that we will see normalization of this number quite quickly. Now, I know you said, well, you said that before, but then we didn't know Ireland would blow up, and we didn't know there would be floods in Queensland that would wipe out, you know, our whole coastal region for a while. But, you know, we can't predict the future, but where we stand right now, that's what we believe. I think cost relative to revenue did deteriorate slightly, as costs did grow slightly faster than income, and that was partially as a consequence of acquisitions and restructuring that is taking place in the organization, but also as a consequence of a very difficult revenue environment. But we still, you know, if you look at this chart since 2003, when we listed in London in July 2002, you can see the strong growth over this period since we listed in London in both revenue, which has grown much faster than cost. Revenue grew by 16% and cost by 13%. And that headcount, if you exclude evolution, is pretty flat. Obviously, we've had some adjustments in areas where life is pretty tough, and we see them as being tough for a long period ahead. But otherwise, our headcount is pretty stable. We've had, in some of the areas that are growing, an absorption of heads into the organization. So overall, I would regard this as, I use the word disappointing. It is a very disappointing year for us. At the start of the year, as I said, we thought we would do a lot better. And we are operating profits down 17%. If you strip out impairments, that's down 9%. And a lot of that, you know, part of that would be the debt buyback. But as I said, part of that would be difficult revenue environment. And then attributable earnings down 21% and EPS down 26%, which obviously we have some more shares in issue, which I know a lot of you guys are shouting about. But we decided to keep our dividend flat, and that's, for the South African shareholders, that's a big bonus, because the rand is a lot weaker. And I don't see Louis used to complain about the dividend, or Ruby yet today. But and then we've also embedded in the dividend our STC credit, so that dividend for individuals would still be tax-free, so it's even another big boost. So you shouldn't be upset about the dividend. You can be upset about the earnings. Then net tangible assets per share down 8.3%. That's all in the rand. The rand, because we translate into sterling, the rand took about 200 million quid out of our net asset value. And then you can see our shareholders' equity relatively flat, and that would be bolstered by earnings and some of the shares that we had to issue. And then our loans and advances were down 2.8%, but in stable currency they're actually up. In South Africa they're up, I can't remember the number, about 5 or 6%. Australia down, and UK pretty flattish. So that's an overall summary of the story. And if we look at our financial targets, we did adjust our ROE target. We're way below it. It's 7.8%. It's not a happy number for us or for you. Very clearly, you know, we have to get the number back to within our targets in the not too distant future, and that's what we'll strive to do. It obviously, you know, it is reflective of the results that we have just delivered. Our EPS growth I've covered, our cost income ratio I've covered, our dividend is just within our target range at 1.9, our bottom end of our range is 1.7, and our capital adequacy for Investec Limited up slightly at a total level, 16.1 from 15.9, Tier 1 down slightly in South Africa. That's after implementation of Basel 2.5, which added, I can't remember, about 6 billion rand of risk-weighted assets. And then the UK, similar sort of number, flat on Tier 1, and Tier 2, total capital up slightly, again after the implementation of Basel 2.5. So we did get extra risk-weighted assets from just a change in regulation, and that sort of affected those ratios, but still, in our opinion, pretty solid. If we look at our divisions, I think specialist banking, you can see it's had a pretty torrid time over the last 5 years. If you know, we have some businesses there actually doing well and others that have battled. We went back into old style terminology. Private banking has battled and it's still not profitable after this Australian write-off, but that will start coming back now, and what we used to call capital markets has continued to do quite well. So it is a tale of two cities inside that specialist bank. But asset managers, you can see, you know, double their earnings since the start of the financial crisis. That's almost doubled. And that's a pretty solid achievement with very strong net inflows over the last few years. And wealth and investment down slightly, but it's masked by two things. One is we have to consolidate the Swiss business in there, which is still loss-making and needs to be fixed up. And that's part of something that we're busy doing. And then we sold the asset management piece of Rensburg's, so we lost that revenue stream, which is about 1.7 million quid. So overall, that business was up probably about 8% in this particular period. So you know, that's just a headline summary. If we look at asset management, I think they maintain very competitive performance. More than doubled their funds under management. They've had 3 years in a row of £5 billion of net inflows. And, the momentum has been positive. I think that they've got good clarity on what they want to do in life and where they're going, and they just have to do more of the same. And obviously, like all these businesses, they're subject to the risks of volatile markets. So their cost-to-income ratio is slightly up 64%. And ROE, you can see at one stage ROE was quite low because we'd made acquisitions. Now you can see through building off the back of those, some of those acquisitions, which was really the London business, the South African business has been grown entirely organically. You can see the cost, the ROE coming through. So at 84% and on tangible at 288%. So, you know, well-run business and continues to perform. I think the wealth and investment business, this is where we have spent money making acquisitions. The South African business, it has been a consolidation of lots of little platforms, and the UK business has been a consolidation of a whole number of UK wealth managers. And we do cover acquisition, the Williams de Brouw acquisition or Evolution acquisition, almost the whole of the UK in this business. So it is it's a top five player in the UK, and it is a substantial business. And as I said, the results were adversely affected by the operation in Switzerland and the sale of the fund management business, which we got a fair amount of money for at the time. So I think the short-term prospects are supported by a lot of synergies that we expect to come through once the rationalisation is complete. So a lot of work to still do there, but £35 billion of funds under management globally, it is a sizable business for us. And we get to the specialist bank. Obviously, this is where performance was down. And again, as I said, it is like a tale of two cities. I think two things. The debt buybacks were not repeated. Last year we made £32 million on debt buybacks and some other money from the same closing out hedges, which would have added to that £32 million. And then we had a weaker performance from our principal investment portfolio, which was mainly listed assets that we hold, which in the mining sector, and the shares came down quite substantially in this particular year, whereas in our private equity assets, we still seem to have done reasonably okay. So those are the two big reasons and why the operating profit was down. We saw quite a good turnaround in our private banking operations in South Africa and in the UK. I think the legacy issues in Australia and Ireland, you know, would have also clouded this overall performance. We also, in our property group, launched our property fund in South Africa. I think they also announced results today, and they had a very strong year of performance the first year with a return to shareholders of about 28%. You know, at least they can say nice things about their performance. We can't. But well done to Sam and his team on that. And I think if we look at the outlook, we're in a tough macro environment, and that does impact on activity levels. And, you know, this is very volatile. There's seasons when you think it's coming right, and there's seasons when you think, well, when will this ever come right? And I suppose we've seen the elections that took place in Europe over the last 2 weeks and the consequences of that, and there's still a lot of tidying up to do in that part of the world. On the other side, America looks like it's doing a lot better. So this is still going to be a tough space, but we do see that impairments are starting to normalize, and certainly if you have a world as it is today, these impairments will normalize over the next, you know, year or two. So again, you know, cost to income ratio in that business at about 62%. I suppose that's reasonable when you think of the various business activities that we have. I think moving on to strategy, I think last year we spoke about three distinct different business units. They have different profiles, they do different things. Two of them deal with corporate, institutional and government, our asset management business, and they provide, as you know, just investment management services. And then the specialist bank, which deals both with private clients and corporate, institutional and government, provides advisory, transactional banking, lending, treasury and trading and investment activities to a fairly narrowly defined client base, starting with high-income individuals all the way through to government. And then our wealth and investment business provides services to private clients and wealth management services, etc., to private clients. So asset management, this business, as I said earlier, has been organically built by and large from international global platform, from an emerging market client base. Its focus is institutional and its client base is global. And it has a strong culture and a very stable and experienced management team. And I think that its emphasis is on long-term sustainability and on quality and depth across its business, at all times maintaining cost discipline. It wins numerous awards. I think last year Hendrik himself was won award of European Fund Manager of the Year. I think it has really migrated from a South African business to a global business, and its brand is well established all around the world. And that is part of a reward for the internationalization strategy of our organization. So I think to answer the fellow in Business Day yesterday, explain why you went to London, explain all these things. I mean, here is a result of making our business a lot more international than just a South African business. And we think that long term, we get lots of benefits from that. The same applies to this business. We've created a global platform with very strong regional capability. And our focus is on internationalizing this business because many of our clients want an international offering. And, you know, as in South Africa, exchange control has been relaxed quite significantly. We don't want to lose all our money that we look after clients in South Africa to global wealth managers. We have to have product and capability to offer them. And so this was a very important step that we took in terms of building up this particular business. So clearly the focus is on the successful integration of Williams de Broe and then the development of the international and UK resident non-domiciled business via our Guernsey and Swiss platforms. And that's very, very important for us as an organization to maintain our presence. We operate in a number of different markets and we have sales and distribution in those markets, and it's very important that we create this global platform. So we have very well established platforms in both South Africa and the UK. I believe we've spent a lot of money on building good systems which enable us to do things, you know, at a lower cost, and that our offering is a very good offering. And you can see again in this business also strong growth in funds under management, but obviously we spent money buying these businesses, and now we can build off the back of buying these businesses organically, and that's our key, is to drive this business organically. If we look at the specialist banking business, I've got here three areas, but we're probably really four. We're an investment business where we invest in properties, private equity and other investment opportunities. We're an advisory business where we advise large corporate and mid-corporate clients around the world in cross-border type transactions or local transactions, and those are really the two activities that we do inside the corporate advisory and investment business. Then we have our corporate and institutional banking business, which we've always called capital markets, but people get confused as to what you are because it is a banking business. Yes, there are elements of, you can see we don't make a lot of money trading, so we're not a big trading house. And then we have our private banking business that looks after private clients, and where we've got transactional banking, lending, deposits, advice, and we offer our clients investments as well. Often a lot of the investments from our other channels, which may be from the asset management business or the wealth and investment business. So on our corporate advisory businesses, I think what we have built is good domestic platforms, and South Africa mid to large cap, in the UK very strong mid cap space, and in Australia we're building a mid cap franchise, which we are having quite a lot of success at. Again, the issue for us here is globalizing this business so we're able to offer our clients links between different between the developed world and the emerging world, and between the different geographies that we've got. And we have been spending time now putting these platforms together in global forums. We're building a global resource capability because we have resource expertise in a number of the geographies that we operate within, and we're really starting to see good flow from that. And it is important for us as a firm to have this capability so we link the emerging world with the developing world. And it goes both ways. So this is something that we have been building over many, many years. We have good, very good advisory platforms in place, and we think that, you know, we are in a strong position in this particular market. If we look at corporate institutional banking, you can see that the bottom slide just shows this is pre-impairments. The strong growth in that business. And as you all know, we have a very good platform in South Africa. The business has done very well in this particular year. We have a very strong capability in the UK and a developing capability in the Australian market. And our strategy here is, you know, focus more on capital light activities, go deep into our core markets, and we need to, as a firm, continue to lengthen our deposit bases as we contend with Bar 3. And then, again, the same principle of focus on Africa, connecting Africa, India and China to our core geographic offerings. And I think that in my 30 years of being a banker and going around the world and talking to investors and the investment community, I've never seen more interest in Africa than I'm seeing now. And I really think that, you know, it is the continent that people are now having a massive interest on, thinking that it is the next wave. And we have to have the ability to deal, because people will see us naturally as an organization that has the capability to do cross-border transactions into the onto the African continent. So we have built a very good international platform, and we do rely on traditional customer bank flow. We believe we've got very sustainable businesses in this place, and we continue to balance our business model and build our business debt. I think we get on to our private banking business. I think a lot of you would know this business, certainly in South Africa, because many of you are clients. And our value proposition is we offer high-touch service to facilitate the creation of wealth and the management of wealth for our clients. We also provide transactional banking products. And this is something we hadn't yet done in the UK or Australia. We've been working a number of years now to get this launched, and we will be launching it. They're in trial at the moment, launching it in both markets in, by beginning of July. And there are a whole lot of banking, credit, investment type products to two distinct client bases, the high-income individual and the high-net-worth individual. And we also obviously offer advice and tailored solutions to the high-net-worth individual. We're focusing on back to basics. I think we lost our way a bit here. We became very property orientated in two of our core markets, and that obviously didn't work out so well, because that's where a lot of our impairments come from. We're focusing on growing our client base and ensuring the product offering is delivered to our global client base. So we're also trying to enhance some of our offerings, because some of them are, need continual enhancement, and there's a lot of work and development taking place on systems and product integration. And you can see that this business now, we've managed to, if you look back in 2009, you can see that our loans exceeded our deposits by over £3.5 billion. We've had a big, strong drive to build our deposit franchise in our core geographies, and you can see now the two match each other. So we have had some success in building our deposit franchise, in particular in the UK and Australia. Clearly, South Africa, we always had a franchise, and it's a different market and a different system where a lot of things are just wholesale and there's just not a lot of retail out there. And then just to come back to Australia, and I know that we've taken a lot of heat. Why did you go there? Well, we went there in 1997. And again, the reason was we were following clients and trying to create a business that supports our global client base. We also found that there's a lot of flow between Australian corporates and South Africa. Australians have big interest in resource capabilities in Africa, and 30% of our cross-border transactions for our South African corporate finance team were together with our Australian corporate finance team, as an example. But we have reorientated this business in its entirety. Our private banking is focused on professional finance and high-income finance. This is what we started out in life, dealing with doctors and accountants. They have a very strong franchise, and that business, over the last 4 years, has built itself into a profitable channel for us. And then we've been reshaping the high net worth business strategy to focus on a focused lending and advisory offering to our clients, as opposed to being a property lender, which we were. So it is, at this point in time, just a specialist bank. We do have asset management people on the ground there, and they fall directly into the global asset management business, but they look after the greater region. And already, and I'm not talking about Australia, I'm talking about the greater region, which is the Asia-Pacific region, Hendrick manages about $5 billion, going to shoot me for saying this, but about $5 billion in the greater Asia-Pacific region. Huh? Yeah, well, I'm disclosing it. Okay. So it does help you build, you know, the fact that we've been pioneers, build a business, build a brand, established our platform, does help us in terms of other business activities that we offer the global group. And we're going much more for alignment between what we do there and what we do in the rest of the world, because it's important we align all our businesses globally. Otherwise, you just have like a shop there that's not linked to what you do, and it's not worth having. And then if you look at the bottom slide, shows you the migration of the loan portfolio. You can see that at least 40% of what we did was property lending. Those are the colors, sort of like a grayish color and a dark blue color. The dark blue color was a non-core book, and you can see that it's come to a very low level at March. And the grayish color is what we do in high net worth property finance, which is to a core client base that we're happy to service and look after. And you can see that 60-something percent of what we do is a professional banking business. So the whole business has been dramatically realigned and transformed over the last year. But it has had a very problematic year because we've had to deal with the legacy stuff. I think if I conclude, we very clearly believe that we have a well-developed brand. I think our brand is well-known, and it's well-accepted in the geographies in which we operate. And we, you know, some of you will say, well, you spend a lot of money on marketing. Yes, we have spent money, and we have gained traction. And I think that people have got to know us, and therefore they're comfortable in depositing money with us, which is a very important thing for us. Now it's up to us to start offering them a greater degree of products. I think we have continued to invest in people, and in a sustainable future, there's lots of stuff that we do as an organization, both to develop our own people and to develop our societies at large. And I think that often we don't get recognition for this, but we win lots of awards, and we're very active in this particular space. I know that doesn't help shareholders because it costs money, doesn't help money, but it helps us in our communities at large. I think what I want to go back to, and this is, Bernard will tell me again now, don't be defensive, Stephen, but I do think I need to go back to where we started out in life when we listed in London back in 2003. What we have done in this period, because I think, you know, this bad year actually sort of like thinks that you have gone backwards in life, where we probably have a little bit, but not that materially. I think in the last 10 years, you've seen a very strong growth in our revenues. From £500 million to just under £2 billion. Yes, some of that came from acquisition, but I can strip out the acquisitions. It won't be big numbers. It'll be a few hundred million. I think that you've seen in this last year very strong growth in fees and commissions, up 12.3% in pounds. In a stable currency, it's up a lot higher. I don't know the number in my head. and our net interest up 2.6%. Again, in stable currency, that would be up probably 7 or 8%. And then we suffered this year because we didn't have the debt buyback, so our trading income came down, as I said earlier, and then our income from investments came down for the reasons I quoted earlier. But still, a strong, long track record of building a better quality earnings base. If we look at what we've done to our earnings drivers, we've grown our third-party funds under management again in pounds by 17%. So if you start in 2003 and end in 2012, there's no exchange rate difference because they were almost the same. They were 1230 against 1250. 1250, funny enough, in 2003. So a little bit of a difference, but not material. And if you look at our growth in loans, obviously that's flattened since the financial crisis. But we grew loans by 19% since 2003 as we built our franchises around the world. You might say, well, you shouldn't have done that. You wouldn't have taken the bad debts. And obviously, part of that is correct. We maybe ran them up too high in the back end of the bull market. And we grew our customer deposits by 17%. And that would have been, in that growth, a big shift from wholesale to retail. I think this number, a lot of people probably haven't worked out, is that our compound growth in net tangible asset value per share was 17% in sterling, and that excludes dividends. If you go from 203 to where we are today, if you take all the goodwill into account, which a lot of analysts like to do, it was 23%, but a lot of that comes from the issue of shares for acquisitions. So stripping it out and saying per share, what is the number? It was 17% over the last 10 years. If, and it's a complicated graph, I add dividends to the number, the compound, the IRR, if you invested in at NAV in 2003 and you exited at NAV in 2012 and you took the dividends on the way, you would have earned 31% IRR. If you went into the share 2003, which was the bottom of the last cycle, and exited, took all the dividends on the way and exited in 2012, which is again at a low point in our, I hope, in our history, 22.5%. And then if you exited at NAV, which includes goodwill, in a 2003, out of 2012 and took dividends on the way, the return, the IRR was 22%. So if you look at our business over the long time, I think there has been performance. Yes, this last year has been a bad year, which we accept and we take responsibility for part of it. The crisis side, we can't take responsibility for. That's life. So we've also had to build our capital up at the same period, and we've grown our capital base by 21% over the last, since 2003, which again is a consequence of needing more capital in the particular environments that we operate, more capital from a regulatory perspective, and more capital from a counterparty perspective. So we've had to do this over the years, and most of it has been internally generated. Some of it we've done shares for cash to buy back debt, which would have helped us on the way, but these are things that we believe we had to do because we had to manage our balance sheet. Over the last 4 years, what was important for us was make sure we build the businesses that have got momentum and manage the balance sheet. Make sure we have the capital and liquidity to navigate a very, very difficult crisis, which, you know, can limp along for years to come. Some people think this can go on for another 5 years, this up, down that we've been living with over the last while. Now, if I talk to Mr. Pessimist here in front of me, Ian Cantor, he says go on 10 years. So he's going even longer. But anyway, I mean, we live in an emerging market, so hopefully it won't be so bad in South Africa. So in summary, our strategic focus is, again, still building low capital intensive revenue, managing the capital side of life very well, making sure we keep the business tight from a cost perspective, but we still need to invest for the future, always maintaining the appropriate levels of capital and liquidity, because that helps you, you know, get through very difficult storms. I remember Safra from New Republic Bank said, you build your foundation so that the boat can, you build your boat so it can navigate through very rocky waters, because that's the life we live in, that's the kind of world we live in. And then we want to continue implementing our single bank structure so that we get the right operational efficiencies and offer the right product to our client base. We just want Hendrik to maintain momentum in asset management. He doesn't have to do anything else. He just must keep going. And then we have to complete our integration in wealth and investments and continue internationalizing our offering. And then we need to capture the opportunities between the developed and the developing world, because that's what we're positioned to do as a firm. So our outlook, we're in a very challenging environment. And, we will continue to pursue the strategy of aligning our business model. We believe that our competitive position is strong. And I certainly believe when you put us in Europe, where we operate, or we don't really operate much in Europe, but certainly in the UK, we have a very good competitive positioning because we're still open for business. We don't have to deleverage our balance sheet by 40% as some of the European banks have to do. And they have all gone home. They've all had to go home because they had to slow down the internationalization strategy. So there is a lot of opportunity for us as a firm with our platforms in place. We believe we have very good people and we have good skills in our organization, and we believe we can continue to take advantage of opportunities in our core niches. And our focus is on winning new clients and servicing existing clients in the best possible way. I think we've dealt by and large with our legacy issues, and we can concentrate now on clients. But again, the environment remains unpredictable, and but we still will continue to build on our solid foundations. I think in closing, and I've just got a little story here to tell. I mean, I think what people fail to understand about us is that we are an organization that has developed a unique culture, which encourages our people to be transparent through open and honest dialogue. This results in the organization receiving a massive amount of feedback, which is often very robust. I think the last few years have taught us many lessons, and reminded us of lessons we may have learnt in the past but forgotten. And I think, you know, if you were a lender in South Africa in 98 when rates went up to 25%, you learned some lessons of what not to do. Unfortunately, by 2006 we'd forgotten some of those and repeated some of the mistakes, and now we hard code them so we don't repeat them again. But we are an organization that accepts feedback from all our stakeholders. And that's not only from shareholders, from all our stakeholders, which will include government, employees, and society at large. And we believe our ability to understand and act on such feedback can only help us create a more powerful organization in the future. So from where we stand as a firm, we've navigated a storm. We know that we haven't done well this year. We're not happy with how we performed this year. You know, we know that a return on equity of 7.8% is no good, and that we have to get it back to the numbers that we lived with, or we'll never get back to 20 unless asset management and wealth management become a much bigger part of our business. And that just depends on how life is out there. But we know we've got a lot to do as a firm. We think we have done a massive amount of work to make sure that we tidy, that to make sure we deal with our legacy issues, and make sure that we can go forward as opposed to go backwards. And if we show you what we've done over the long term, we have a business that is multiples, if maybe 100 times better than the one that was on a 35 multiple about 12 years ago. So we can't help where share prices are. We've got to run our business. And we have to manage our business in the best way that we can. And we are in a volatile world, and there are times when it will be positive and times that will be negative. But we know. We take the feedback. We understand what shareholders are saying. And, you know, we are out there trying to build value, trying to look after our clients. And obviously, you know, we're trying to do the best we can. And hopefully we will succeed. And we really believe we have the platforms to succeed. So, again, on that note, I thank you all for attending. Thank you for your feedback over the last while, and look forward to any questions that you may have. I'll start in London, maybe. It's quite a big house here.
Any questions? James has got a question.
James, you're almost like Ruby and...
good morning.
And Louis.
I promise not to ask about the dividend. Two, if I may. Firstly, on the balance sheet, will you be happy for customer deposits to yet again outstrip loans and advances to customers this year? And secondly, can you tell us how much of your loan book are property assets where the loan-to-value is 85% or more?
Okay, on the second question, you're going to have to ask Ursula. I haven't got the details in my head, so you'll have to ask her that question online. And the first question is our strategy is to diversify our customer base, and therefore, you know, we did slow down our deposit growth for a while, then we let it go, we let it run again, but we're still going to diversify our customer deposit base, and therefore you may see continual growth, but obviously we have a loan deposit ratio below 70, and it's more about diversification than growth at this point in time. Any more questions?
No more questions there, Stephen.
Okay. I'll come back to South Africa. I don't see Ruby or Louie. Stephen. I'm a bouncer.
Yes, just a question on the ROE for the bank. Do you think you would be able to exceed cost of equity over the next few years? And if not so, shouldn't one reconsider being a bank in the UK, maybe exit the UK and just run the bank in South Africa and an asset manager in the UK?
I think we get that question quite often, and you know, we do believe that we built a franchise, and we do believe that cost of equity will adjust for, you know, risk. It hasn't adjusted for risk. You've still got very high expectations of what cost of equity should be for that type of business. But as people get more comfortable with, you know, if you look at that slide I put on from The Economist, you can see where bank returns were until the late 80s. You know, they were always below 10 ROE. And if you're going to have interest rates, 10-year rates or 30-year rates at 3 and 10-year rates at 2, you know, to say that we've got cost of equity above that sort of number, as I said to you earlier, is delusional. We think that we can get to a reasonable cost of return in that business. That business is not only about being a bank. I think it adds value to the other businesses that we have, in particular the wealth business, as we capture the client flow from either side. And you know, it's the same question you guys asked us in 2004. Why don't you sell asset management? Because you're not getting a good return from it. So, you know, we think strategically it's right for us to be there. We've got a good platform. If that part of the world is going through a particularly difficult time, and we'll manage our way through. And, yeah, we don't manage the business for today. We manage it for the long term. Mark.
Stephen, I know your presentation is more on the sort of the macro stuff and so on, but just to ask some questions on just focusing on one area. In a few years ago, you'd have spent quite a bit of time talking about your exposure to residential and commercial property loans in the UK and
yeah.
How you needed to put capital into that business. So I don't think you mentioned it today, so I'm sure that business hasn't disappeared, and hopefully it's not part of your social security or charity businesses you were talking about in your first slide. But perhaps just a mention on how that's doing, the residential property.
The mortgage business.
The mortgage business in the UK. And then secondly, just turning to South Africa, I mean, we hear a lot about Investec Bank's exposure to certain property developments and golf courses and things like that. So, I mean, presumably you've taken a lot of those assets onto your book. I mean, are you in a position to give us some sort of number and some strategy on how you're working your way out of that?
Right. You saw our South African net defaults are 2.7% of our book. So I'll start off with that question. I mean, you know, we had, relative to the size of our book, our residential property, the ones you're talking about were less than R1 billion, if that. So you're not talking a massive number on a 130 billion rand book, and I think you know, some of those things we've taken in, and we've got one, I think they changed the name to Copperfield, some of them we've actually sold, you know, we built the club out and selling the stuff out, and it'll take us 3 years and we'll have all our money back plus some change. There's some that are more difficult than that, but you know, they're small in our life at the moment, and we haven't done that kind of lending for probably 5 years. So I don't know if that deals with that side of life. So I think, you know, those are little pimples, and yes, they were stupid, because if I went back to, you know, 10 years earlier, we would never have done any of them. But something crept into our system that said, okay, we can do this stuff because we've got pre-sales and the risk is de-risked. If you get to the UK business, I think you're talking specifically about the mortgage business, And we bought Kensington in 2007. I think on the UK stuff, it has been going fairly well. Obviously, we had big write-offs, as we told you at the trading update, that we had a write-off in Kensington, £99 million. So it basically broke even this year as opposed to in other years that has been profitable. And that book is in rundown mode. We haven't, we've changed that business completely. We want to deal with only prime clients and, you know, clients that we're happy to have as private clients of our group as we move forward. So we've shifted that business completely. The other thing is that we've been reducing our exposure to commercial property, and I don't know what the exact number is and what has happened to it, relatively speaking. But certainly in the UK, you know, we're doing much better quality deals because a lot of banks are not doing anything, and we're managing our legacy stuff out. And I think, you know, we're doing reasonably well there. Clearly, we have the little business in Ireland. We haven't done any lending in Ireland for 4 years or 3 years, and we had to deal with the consequence of the bubble, and that was the big write-offs we had last year. The write-offs in this year have been relatively moderate. Compared to the write-offs last year. So I hope that answers your question. If you want more detail, you have to ask Ursula. I don't know it off by heart. More questions?
How many of them are... Of the banks that you compete with in the UK, how many of them are either emerging market based banks such as HSBC, Standard Chartered, alternately state owned? So how many are truly independent banks in the UK?
Well, you've got Standard Chartered, which is an emerging market bank, and that's had a very successful strategy by concentrating in the developing markets. HSBC is mixed, so it's got both developed and developing world a lot more like us. And then you've got Barclays, which is independent. And then the two big ones, RBS and Lloyds, are obviously still have significant shareholders. And then you've got a whole lot of others that were banks that are either in rundown mode, like Bradford and Bingley, Northern Rock, Alliance and Leicester is part of Santander, Abbey Santander. So there's Santander as well in the UK, which is still owned, but it's owned by Santander, the Spanish bank. It's close to the small independent, yeah. And then you've got Rothschilds and a few guys, but they're not really that active in our space. They're more advisory-type operations. But, yeah, the competitive landscape has shifted dramatically there. I think, is that the point you're trying to make to respond to Stefan's point? Sure. Which is an opportunity, not a threat, actually, for us. And we're a fresh brand, and, you know, people were unhappy with what was going on there, all their banks.
I'm wondering if you can hear me. Which would be your benchmark? You have to benchmark Investec against which? That's, I think, the question is.
Where? I can't see you. Where? Barry. Okay. You can't benchmark us. That's why we've given you three firms, three income streams. We've got wealth and investment, where there are boutiques like Rathbones and a whole host of guys in the UK that we would be very similar to, or Bank Julius Baer in Switzerland. We've got asset management, where you can compare us in South Africa to a Coronation, which is the only listed vehicle, and in the UK you've got to compare us to a Schroders, a Aberdeen, I wouldn't compare us to a Man Group because they're more a hedge fund type operation. And then you've got the specialist bank where, I mean, we're a different type of animal. And there's not many players that you can compare us to. There's the Close Brothers in the UK, which is a specialist bank, but also has some asset management and wealth management. There's Macquarie in Australia, but they're much more investment banking. Goldman's we're not the same as. So it's hard to find a peer. And you guys don't value the bank in much anyway, so. Moment we're chipping in. More questions? Nothing. Okay, well, I took a long time. Sorry, but there should be something to eat. For those of you that are hungry, I'm pretty hungry. And I'm here to answer any questions that you guys didn't want to ask online. So, thank you.